everyone, welcome to Season 13, Episode 30 of the Ubuntu Podcast. I'm Alan, and joining me this week is Martin. Hello, Martin, how are you?
Hello there, I'm very well. Yourself?
Yeah, you know. I'm shrugging. For those who can't see it, I'm shrugging. We should make this a video podcast. No, we shouldn't.
No.
And Mark. Hello, Mark, how are you?
Hello. Oh, you know. one of those weeks, and it's only Tuesday.
Oh my gosh. Oh,
we're a jolly bunch.
Yeah. Martin, what have you been up to this week?
Well, I have been upgrading my computer.
Oh.
Yeah, it's been all over the internet, hasn't it? I've seen photos of lots of expensive pieces of computer equipment.
Well, yes, it all started with the very first expensive bit of computer equipment, which is a new graphics card. So I saw that NVIDIA released their new 3000 series cards. Mm-hmm. So, you know, got some Bitcoin, had the day off work on release day, and purchased an RTX 3090.
Gosh, is this one of the ones which fills up half of the case?
Yeah, it's a triple width card, and I have a large case, and it has like 4 millimeters of clearance in the sort of the length of the case.
What is the volume that that's taking up? Is it the heatsink or the fans?
Yeah.
I mean, it can't be the circuit board and the chip.
The heatsink and the fans. Yeah, I mean, the circuit board is a thin, fairly thin PCB. You know, when you go to these channels where they tear it down, you think, oh, is it all this fuss about this little thing? Yeah, it's like a kilo and a half of copper tubing and fin stacks and what have you, and then three great big fans plonked on top of that.
Wow. And can it play Crysis?
Yes.
Right.
It can even play the remastered version, which has just been released as well, I think, to coincide with the launch of these cards.
And have you actually used it in anger yet, or has it just been admiring it and taking photos for Instagram?
I've been playing some games. Well, the first thing I did is stretch out my lead as the number one performing computer on the Gaming on Linux benchmark forums. So there's a couple of benchmarks to do there. So immediately I, you know, ran up those and then overclocked my system and trimmed down the operating system and just made the margins, you know, bigger and bigger. So I had some fun doing that. And then I've played some games as well.
Driving games?
Of course, yes. So, you know, all the usual ones. So, you know, F1 2017 and Grid Auto Sport and Dirt Rally, and then some of the arcadey ones. That's pretty much all I've played. Oh, I did actually play something else. I can't remember what it was now. I played an actual computer. Oh, that was it. So there's only one RTX game on Linux, RTX being the ray tracing technologies, and that's Quake 2, I think it is, which was remastered with full light ray tracing. So I've played that.
Really not what I was expecting you to say at all.
Indeed. Anyway, as someone who is averse to first-person shooters, I quite enjoyed that. I was having quite a lot of fun playing that. So I think because of its vintage, it's a little simpler than some of today's first-person shooters, and it was about my pace. So I thoroughly enjoyed playing that.
Excellent. Mark, have you been up to anything?
I've been playing Hades. Did I mention that?
You did. Have you still been playing? You've got a lot more hours clocked up in hell, have you?
Yeah, I've not actually kept track of how many hours. But it's good.
Excellent.
I'm still enjoying it. I'm not got a lot further. There's the third boss is very tricky, I find.
Okay. Awesome. Well, I look forward to hearing more about Hades another time. Let's get on with the show. So first up, we wanted to have a chat about that there IoT thing that everyone keeps talking about. And to be clear, in the context of this conversation, we're going to be talking about IoT devices in a domestic home setting. We're not talking about industrial robots and IoT in the enterprise and stuff that manages buildings and smart cities or any of that nonsense. We're just talking about the stuff that you as a human being might put in your dwelling to make your life better. So, how are we qualifying IoT devices? Mark, do you have a definition in your head of what an IoT device is?
Okay. When I think of an IoT device, it is a device which you plug in your home and it connects to the internet and does something, performs some sort of utility in your home using the internet to enable that.
Well, you said plug in, and I have some that don't plug in.
Oh, because they're battery powered.
Yes.
Oh, dear.
So, yeah, let's be a bit woolly and vague. It's a thing in your house and it's probably got an IP address.
Yeah.
Is that probably?
Yeah.
So I think there's some things that we can easily go to. You know, there's the smart speakers. I'm not going to say their names for obvious reasons. And in recent years, you know, lighting stuff. But then I was wondering, do like games consoles pass as an Internet of Things device? Because I have one that has some of the features of some of these other more traditional, you know, IoT devices.
Is that because it's a general purpose computer that happens to be running the software, which also runs on one of these embedded devices? I think that's the difference,
yeah.
is these things aren't general purpose computers. They're generally embedded systems.
I think we should discount general purpose computing devices,
okay,
such that might live on your desk and have a keyboard and a screen.
Right, which is not one of those.
And things that are all-in-one screen, which occupies most of the device.
It's not one of those either.
So, okay. So what you're saying is basically a set-top box.
Of sorts, yes.
Right. So I don't know. I guess they do. I guess they do count because it's a single-purpose device, much like a smart speaker is a single-purpose device. You know.
Yeah, okay.
It's extensible.
So we've kind of talked around it a little bit. So what IoT devices do each of us have in our homes?
Well, so I started with, I think, well, obviously set-top boxes, you know, I've had those over the years, but I'm going to dismiss those. I don't think they count for my thoughts. So I'm going to dismiss those and say, I've got the lady cylinders, and I call them that simply because it's a lady's voice and it's cylindrical.
Mm-hmm.
The Amazon one that I use to play music and ask for weather, and the kids use it to do their homework and stuff like that.
Can I just make a point here? You're trying really hard not to say the A word, but it's called Amazon Echo for a reason, right? So you don't have to say the A word when you're discussing it.
When I often say the word inadvertently, and there is one on my desk. It doesn't matter if you two say it because I've got headphones on, but if I say it, then it might react. So yeah, I've got some of them. I've got five of those dotted around the house. Those were the first things I got.
Are they connected as a single coherent group?
No, there's a downstairs group and two of them are upstairs. So no, they're not all grouped together. You can do stuff like play music on all of them and it will synchronize the music across all of them, or play a podcast across all of them. So as you walk from one room to another, it's, you know, and I quite like that. I quite like having the same audio with me as I walk through the house. If I'm doing housework or something, you know, carrying clothes from one part of the house to another, I don't lose the context of a conversation going on a podcast or something. I quite like that. And because I'm not wearing headphones, I don't have the worry of wires or batteries or one of my kids jumping out of somewhere and scaring me because I'm wearing headphones and I'm not paying attention, which does happen in this house. So yeah, that was the first thing, is the Amazon things. Yeah.
So I think as well, in the traditional sense of IoT devices, that was the first IoT device we had. In fact, curiously, the day I got it, Mark was at my house.
Ah, yes.
And it was the original Echo, the tool, Amazon Echo. And my daughter, who was, I don't know, like 4 or 5 at the time, was absolutely fascinated by this thing that you could talk to and it would answer you. So that's where it started for us. We have 3 of those now. And they're all discreet. So one is my daughter's, one is my wife's, and one is mine. And they're in different rooms in the house.
Yes. Mark, I don't think you have one of these, do you?
No. I mean, the closest thing that I have really is, a couple of years ago, I tried to make my own doorbell using a Raspberry Pi and a fancy button that I bought off of Adafruit. But no, I don't have one of these Amazon Echoes. Unfortunately, so I got to the point where I got a notification to my phone when someone pressed the doorbell, but it stopped working. And then Basically, I had a baby and I didn't have time to mess with doorbells. So I went out and bought a wireless doorbell instead of trying to make one. So at the moment, my doorbell doesn't tell my phone when someone's ringing the door.
So speaking of doorbells, I also have the Ring branded doorbells, which have cameras on them. And I got two of them because my house is a weird shape and two of the doors face forwards, and some people come to one door and some people come to the other. And it's quite nice that when someone's giving a delivery and I'm upstairs, they hit the button and all of the echoes in the house ring and then say there is somebody at the front door or there's somebody at the side door. So it actually tells me which door to go to. Now, I can hear Joe saying I'm completely lazy and really it should just be a doorbell. And you can buy doorbells, traditional doorbells, that have two different rings.
Or two different doorbells.
Or, yeah. Well, I mean, we had, before this, we had two different buttons, one on each door, but they had little dip switches on the back and you could change the ring depending upon which door button was pressed. So, you know, you can do this without smarts and without IP addresses. But I think the thing that I like about this is the extensibility. Like, I didn't have that Ring doorbell. And so that wasn't a feature that I cared about. And then when they came out and I saw one and my neighbor had one and I thought, ah, actually, that's quite cool. I quite like the fact that the doorbell goes. And in fact, this morning I had a delivery from IKEA at 7 a.m. and I was laying in bed and there's almost no chance that anyone's going to rise me out of my bed at 7 in the morning. But because they hit the doorbell and the Amazon thing is right next to my head by my bed, it rang and said there's somebody at the front door. And so, you know, like a zombie, I was able to prise myself out of bed and go to the door. So, you know, you could argue they're lazy, but I actually quite like them.
Very good. So that recently, very recently, in fact, I've got quite a lot of smart bulbs, smart lights and lamps and things. So this office, all of the lighting in this room is smart in air quotes. I can whisper her name and she will illuminate me in every colour of the rainbow.
This is very disturbing.
And then for my live streaming, I've got Elgato key lights. Now, those I can't speak to, but I can push buttons on my phone and turn them on and off. And that's quite nice because I just now have one button which turns everything on and sets everything at the right levels. Whereas before it was all manual, I had to go around and twiddle knobs and buttons on six or seven different things. So I'm really sort of setting that out where this was something that saved me a bunch of time and something that I do quite regularly. I just push a button and magic happens. So what are you using your IoT devices for? And are they a labor saver for you or are they just novelty value?
I mean, I could open the Amazon app and scroll through and tell you all the things I've ever said because it keeps a track of, you know, all the things you say, partly because there's a button next to it where you can say, where it says, did I do the right thing? And you can say yes or no to help train the algorithm or whatever they call it to make it better. And so if I scrolled through it, I would probably find that a lot of the time it's me telling it I want to listen to the radio. And so I'll just say her name and then say play and then whatever radio station I want to listen to. And there's like half a dozen radio stations that I listen to quite a lot. And as I walk from one room to another, I'll tell one of them to shut up. And then in the next room, I'll like play a different radio station. So a lot of it is just playing radio. And yeah, that's convenience. I don't have any radios in this house anymore. Those, It's all streaming radio. And some radio stations just aren't, that I listen to, aren't available on normal FM bands. And if they're on DAB, the reception is terrible and they cut out. Whereas streaming over the internet, they work. So, you know, yeah, okay, I could replace this internet-enabled device with something else, but it wouldn't be as good.
Right.
I also use them to turn the lights on and off. And so I've got a light outside and a light inside, which come on at when it gets to twilight. So the lights are on if I'm coming home and it's dark. I know the lights will be on, which is more welcoming. And I have all the lights in the house go off at bedtime and that stuff like that.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's automation, some of it, and some of it is just convenience. A lot of the time it's like setting a timer, you know, 3-minute timer when I make a cup of tea, or, you know, setting a timer for something I've put in the oven. And setting multiple timers and having her beep at me for, You know, it's yeah. just a convenience more than anything. And while, yeah, I could use a smartphone or I could use a notepad and a piece of paper, when I'm making chicken wings, there's no way I'm picking up a pen and a piece right. of paper and smothering like chicken juice all over them.
So some of your use cases are very similar. I actually looked and I could say that broadly there are five things. Every smart speaker only needs to do five things. It needs to be able to play music and radio stations. This is what we do. Turn lights on and off, tell you the weather, and kitchen timers is the main one. Because when I'm cooking, I don't have to stop and push buttons. I just yell at the thing and tell her to set a timer for 2 minutes and it's done.
So as I've sort of alluded to when I said once I tried to do this thing and then I didn't anymore, you kind of getting the impression that I don't really have any of these things. And for me, it's kind of a trade-off, because while I don't have, you know, I don't have an internet of things in my house, I wouldn't mind having an intranet of things in my house if everything stayed, you know, within my network. But what I'm not really keen on is all of this stuff is essentially bouncing stuff off someone else's servers and sending my data elsewhere, and that data is being used for some purposes other than just providing me with this convenience. And for me, the things you've just described, there's got to be a trade-off. So I carry a smartphone around, which, you know, does a lot of the same things. It gathers a lot of data and so on. But for me, having a smartphone in your pocket everywhere is, you know, it's a completely life-changing device. Whereas the ability to, you know, not push the button on the front of my oven when I'm standing in front of my oven cooking something, it's not worth having something that's always listening to what I'm saying and what my family is saying in my house all of the time in order to enable that. The trade-off isn't worth it for me.
Well, I think you're minimizing how timers work, because it's not a case of there is one timer like there is on the front of your oven. Your oven has one timer.
It does. My microwave has a second timer. My smartphone has as many as I need in the almost never event that I need to time things differently like that. I just set one timer and then I remember how long everything needs. It's, you know.
Yeah, but maybe you might not. Like if you're cooking something complex and you want different things to finish at different times, then maybe you have different timers or...
Gantt chart.
Yeah, okay. If you... Yeah, okay, or do what my mother-in-law does, and she has a notepad and she writes down all the times and then ticks them off as she puts things in the oven and stuff like that. Sure, there's analog versions of all of these things. I could go and look out the window to see what the weather is like, but it's quite nice to know when she says there is a N% chance that it's going to rain in the next hour. It's quite nice to know as I'm walking out the house. It's a convenience. The whole thing is a convenience. It's a trade-off. You're right. There is the possibility... Well, there is the inevitability that this data is being sent somewhere else. And I know it's being sent somewhere else, certainly for the Ring doorbells, because I pay for a service that archives the video for 30 days. And so I know that the video is sat on a server somewhere, the video of like a dog walking past my front door and the video of me leaving the house in the morning and me arriving at the house a few hours later. All of that stuff is archived on a server somewhere. And I think I've come to the realization that life is too short and I don't care. I don't care that there is a video somewhere of me in a public place driving onto my driveway. There is no tangible harm that can come from knowing that I was driving onto my driveway at 9:10 this morning, because anyone who's standing outside my house could see that anyway.
Okay. So another thing that I think about is the fact that essentially you are providing for free a load of data for someone else to exploit for their business and not really compensating you for it, which isn't something that I'm particularly comfortable with.
Just like I did when I contributed to the Ubuntu project before I started working for Canonical. There are some times in life where, like, I contributed album titles to the CDDB project back in the day.
But then these are open projects, which you can then benefit from.
Not anymore, it isn't. It was bought by a company and closed. So, no, it's an example of that happening.
It is a good example of that happening then. Okay, yes.
But I'm not saying it's a good thing.
Yeah.
I'm saying, yeah, I'm old and I've got a long history of contributing to stuff over the years, which has screwed me.
And you've been so browbeaten by it that you just stopped caring?
Yeah, well, partly. It's partly. I just think I've got to the point where life is too short. And I think, yes, it is a minor worry that these things are listening all the time and listening for their wake word. And maybe they hear something I say that sounds a bit like their name. And from that point onwards, for a few seconds, they record the next few words out of my mouth. And that data then gets shipped off to a server that I don't have control over. That's a bit of a worry. But what are they going to do with that? Like, there's 3 seconds of me saying something after the word that sounds a bit like what her name is. Okay, maybe those words might be, and then I murdered her. that's quite unlikely. I don't think I'm the kind of person who has committed a heinous crime and then admitted it after slightly saying the Lady Cylinder's name, such that it's recorded and stored on a disk somewhere in a data center. I don't know. It seems like a contrived thing that actually isn't going to happen. I don't know.
So earlier this year, when I started doing the smart light thing, the first set of bulbs I bought are Bluetooth only. So they're Hue Philips bulbs, but they don't require their hub.
Mm-hmm.
They have an app that you put on your phone, a different app to the one that speaks to their hub, and you set them up and manage them entirely over Bluetooth.
Right.
And I used that for a day and thought, this is good. And then I set up some smart plugs, and then it was all a bit of a faff, and I bought a home hub and got the app that does the hub and did it all in one place. And it's infinitely easier to create these multiple profiles and zones and all the rest of it, rather than turning them on and off discreetly via Bluetooth.
Hmm. I mentioned a few weeks ago the fact that I bought this Tapo camera to monitor my daughter's nursery, which, you know, I think you would probably agree that I don't want that broadcasting over the internet. Mm-hmm. I don't think either of you would like video of your child on the internet without their, you know, with, well, yeah, anyway. So the interesting thing about that is I can use their app, which manages all their devices, but it is an internal app. It's not, there might be something there that can connect out to the internet, but the fact that I've firewalled the camera off from the internet doesn't impact anything at all about how it works. I mean, there's possibly the with something like that, the minor convenience that if you had that set up for another purpose, you might be able to view it from outside the house. But for me, that's not anywhere near the use case that I have for it. So it's actually quite nice that it does a direct Wi-Fi connection to the camera to set it up, and then it connects from there to your Wi-Fi, and then it keeps everything internal. And yeah, that for me was quite a nice feature of it. Even though it's actually, you know, using their official app, it doesn't have to connect to the internet and bounce it off their server to do it.
It's interesting how some companies are doing that, the in inverted commas right way or safe way, or, you know, fail safe. There was a Apple keynote today, and there was a whole section on home lifestyle products built around their Apple smart speaker. And at the end, it was punctuated with someone very clearly saying what leaves your house and what does not leave your house. And under these circumstances, it won't. And you can only do certain personal questions when your phone is nearby, so implying that you are nearby. So if you're not in the house, the kids can't query your calendar and stuff like that. So I find it interesting that some companies are, you know, pushing the privacy angle hard and pushing the your data is yours and the data stays within your network, you know, and isn't going to be exfiltrated out to our data center somewhere. But does that bother you at all, Martin?
I'm in a similar camp to you in that I think about these things and I try to do the right thing, but then I like the convenience of some of these devices and software. So, you know, Mark talked about firewalling his camera. All of my smart devices are on a separate VLAN, which I do have network monitoring on, and I do look at that just to see what they're up to. And that's me just being a little bit cautious, I suppose. And that's kind of the extent of my sort of tinfoil hattedness about these devices. And I was just thinking, you know, would I get any more? And I think, yes, I would. I would certainly like to have more smart lamps and plugs and lights around the house. That's super convenient. And a bit like you, I would probably go as far as, you know, the doorbells, video entry and smart entry devices as well in the future.
It's funny. I was thinking, you know, none of these things are essential. They're not like bread and milk. I could do without all of these things. In fact, I could go around the house and pull the batteries out of all the Ring doorbells, and I could just unplug all of the Amazon Echoes in the house and replace all of the light bulbs with traditional LED or whatever light bulbs. And, you know, it wouldn't be a catastrophe. It wouldn't be a disaster. I wouldn't have a massive problem with it. But I quite like being able to step into the kitchen and say, thing, radio 4, and on it comes immediately, after a brief advert for BBC Sounds app. Dear BBC, please stop doing that.
Music radio podcasts.
But I think then none of them massively change your life at all. They're conveniences, and it's nice that when I drive up to the house, the lights are already on, and it's nice that at 11 o'clock, it kind of nudges me to go to bed by turning all the lights in the house off, or fading them down, or fading them up in the morning to wake me up, that kind of thing. These are all nice things to have. These are all luxury trappings of first world, but they're not essential, and I could do without them, but I quite like them, so I'm not going to do that. I'm interested to know from our listeners what IoT, if you want to call them that, devices you have. We ran a quick straw poll for fun yesterday on our Twitter account. And the general consensus was don't want those things in my house. But I'm interested to hear from people who do, and whether they're the kind of people like Martin who watch the network, or like Mark, firewall them off completely, or like me, just don't care. Let us know. Send us an email, show@ubuntupodcast.org. And now it's time for Command Line Love. And this one I saw the internet's Martin Wimpress tweet about in a very obvious humble brag about how many CPU cores he has today. What's this then, Martin? What's this all about?
Well, you may remember we talked about Bashtop a little while ago, and we set the internet on fire with YouTube videos and blog posts and all the rest of it, saying how this was an amazing system monitoring tool for your command line. Well, Bashtop is dead. Well, it's all fine because they've been working on BPyTop, which is its successor.
Catchy.
Yes, they need to work on the name. I saw somebody comment on Twitter they should have called it Bashtopi or Bashtopi.
Oh, you just put a Y on the end, Bashtopi.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Which would have been quite good. Anyway, it's a Python implementation of the same tool. It's BPyTop. It's available as a snap, and it's also installable via pip. And you run BPyTop, and it does all the same things, except, and here is why I had that picture. I was running Bashtop on my new supercomputer, which I will talk about next week. And Bashtop crashed because it couldn't cope with all the cores. And I went to the Bashtop website to file a bug or see if this was a known issue. And there was a big banner saying BPyTop is the successor. So I went to that GitHub page, read it, did a snap install, connected some interfaces, and BPyTop works absolutely fine. So I didn't have to raise my bug on the dead Bashtop. I started using BPyTop instead, and I could see all 64 threads
doing nothing.
Well, doing something for a very short amount of time and then doing nothing.
Right. Brilliant. So BPyTop is the new Bashtop.
Indeed.
Thanks for that. And now it's time for all of your wonderful feedback. Rajat emailed us
Love the show. Just wanted to let you know that I'm using Ubuntu 2010 Daily Build as my daily driver. The decision was taken after a few weeks of using it in a VM, and I was blown away by the performance of it. Mm. I think 2010 is more stable than the LTS 2004 on my system. I feel like my computer has been resurrected. This version of GNOME is super slick. Many thanks to the Ubuntu desktop team and Martin, and I'm sure this will be one of the best releases Ubuntu has seen in a while.
That's good to hear. It's always nice to get a re-endorsement of the release that's not out yet. I've upgraded all of mine to 2010 as well. This machine I'm recording on now and laptop behind me and two others, they're all 2010. It's working really well. It is very good.
Yep, we had a 2010 testing day at work today. It's pretty successful. I'm really looking forward to this release.
Super. Ian Forbes emailed us.
He says, on the back of your victory with the Groovy Gorilla naming for the next Ubuntu release, Martin, may I suggest Hubristic Hyena? Well, here's the thing. I managed to catch the attention and ear of Mark Shuttleworth to get that Groovy Gorilla name, and that isn't going to happen again. So thank you.
You don't get that privilege twice. Definitely not twice in a row.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. So thank you for your suggestion, but this one is very squarely in Mr. Shuttleworth's court, I think.
Nicholas left a comment on our YouTube channel.
Microsoft Edge should stay in the Windows world. Leave Linux alone to its stable life. Anyone need Edge, go boot up your Windows 10 VM and do it. Get your loads of virus there. Enough is enough. We don't read out comments from YouTube very often, do we?
No, there's a good reason for that. Nobody's forcing you to use it. You don't have to install it. You can just not install it. It's fine. It's fine. And Mike Dalrymple emailed us.
I am eagerly anticipating the release of Microsoft's Edge browser for Linux. Oh dear, it's brilliant. This is why I put the YouTube comment in, because I thought it was great that, you know, we have, you know, broad interests in our listeners. He goes on to say, I switched to Firefox from Chrome as my daily driver about 2 years ago. Firefox containers and developers tools are what drew with me. With recent developments at Mozilla, I don't believe Firefox will be a viable developer browser within a year or two. I'm not ready to go back to Chrome, but I need to develop on a browser that normals use, and that's what has me interested in Microsoft Edge. While I trust Microsoft a lot more than I once did, I have heard grumblings about Edge sending more telemetry data than I would necessarily want. So here's the question. What tool would you recommend to analyze telemetry data coming out of the Edge browser once it's released? I don't want to sift through all the traffic leaving my network, so I'm looking for a way to analyze the data coming out of a specific application.
Wireshark?
That was my first thought. But then you would need to constrain that to just the traffic to from a particular app. So I'm not sure how to do mm-hmm. this off the top of my head.
Well, you can do it in a VM. So you could have Wireshark running on the IP address of the VM and have the browser in the VM. Or you could have it on another computer on your network. If you know, you don't want to do it in a VM, if you've got another laptop, you could just monitor all the traffic from that machine. And if the only application running on that machine was Edge, then you're just going to get desktop traffic and mm-hmm. whatever Edge is doing. I mean, his question, what tool would you recommend? I wouldn't. I'm not a security professional. I'm not mm-hmm. a network professional. I'd let someone else do it and see what the internet comes up with, because this is exactly the kind of thing that, you know, security professionals on the internet are going to be looking for. So I would go and hunt down articles about Edge telemetry. And if you can't find one, drop a hint to some security nerds somewhere and see if they'll do it for you. Because, they've probably got the tools and the know-how to do it. Dustin Nisbet-Jones emailed us two questions.
Could you each recommend a podcast or YouTube channel or both that you really like? All of your suggestions in the past have always been stellar, and so I'm sure listeners will enjoy your recommendations.
Okay, do you want to go first, Mark?
Okay, this is going to be a bit niche, but give it a go. It's the Critical Role podcast. So Critical Role is basically some a team of friends playing Dungeons & Dragons. And they're all voice actors professionally, and it's absolutely brilliant. It's kind of like listening to an improvised play. The episodes are long, but you can, you know, break them up if you want to. It's really good listen.
That sounds awesome. Martin, what about you?
So because Dustin emailed us two questions, breaking with the strict, you know, guidelines of this segment, I decided I'm going to answer this question with two YouTube recommendations and no podcasts whatsoever. So I'm going to recommend two YouTube channels from Australia, one called Gear Seekers and another one called Hardware Unboxed. And they're both sort of PC hardware enthusiasts. Gear Seekers has a Linux angle to some of their stuff. So if you want to see the latest hardware and often with Ubuntu running on it, that's great. And Nick is very entertaining. And Hardware Unboxed is deep dive hardware information. And there's none of the shouting that the American equivalent channels do. And it's a little bit Australian and bantery, and I like them a lot.
Okay, so I'll give you a YouTube channel called Lindy Beige. And this is a gentleman who is an archaeologist by trade and a bit of an amateur historian. Seems like a professional historian to me. But he just sets his camera up and talks straight to the camera about mostly battle and war-related things. And he is such an enthralling person. You need to watch one of his videos, grab a beer or some other beverage, and just pay close attention to what he's saying, because he is so engaging. I even sit through all of his adverts and watch while he reads his adverts, because they're just as entertaining as the video itself. And I have to pass on credit for passing that on to Andy Smith from Bitfolk, because he recommended Lindy Beige to me. And so I'm recommending it to all of you. And a podcast, I would recommend the Taskmaster podcast. Ooh. Which is interesting because they haven't actually put out any episodes yet. Because the new series of Taskmaster starts this week on Channel 4 in the UK. And one of the ex-contestants on a previous episode is presenting a podcast that's going to be released immediately after the TV episode airs. So I'm looking forward to that. I haven't heard any episodes yet other than the intro that it's going to be released. So there you go. There's another question, but we don't have time for that. So moving on to the final piece of email from Gear Atelstorg, I think.
Ubuntu Mate 20.04.1 is out, and as an LTS user, I was prompted to upgrade. The upgrade was almost flawless, but I miss my GNOME do. What is the recommended way of getting similar functionality on Ubuntu Mate 20.04? I want something that makes it easy to start applications using the keyboard only, something that learns which applications I use most frequently and gradually suggests these after just a keystroke or two.
Okay. So let's start. GNOME Do is no longer available because it's not maintained anymore and it was removed from the archives. I looked at all of the launcher things that I knew of, and all of them have fallen into disrepair except for one. So my recommendation to you is Kupfer, which is in the archive, apt install Kupfer. It's a Spotlight style application, and you hit control space to invoke it, although you can remap that key. And it's got integrations for web browsers and music players and calendars and contacts and just everything. So you can search for files, you can execute, you know, applications, and you can also look up information that's in your other applications as well. And it's the only one that's still maintained. There's a newer version on their website if you want to grab that. So there it is, Kupfer. We'll have links in the show notes.
And that's all for your feedback that we have time for this week. We hope to have more next time. And that's all for episode 30. Thank you all for listening. Next time we'll be back with some news and community news and maybe some events, who knows. But in the meantime, if you want to keep up with us, you'll find us on Twitter. We are at Ubuntu Podcast, and you can also find us on Telegram. You'll find us at ubuntupodcast.org/telegram. And finally, thanks to Joe Ressington for doing our show production. If you need podcast production services, you can contact him at joeress.com. See you next time, everyone.